Blog Talk Radio.
Fernando Uribe, folks, I want to welcome you all here tonight, the 27th of September, here in the year 2018. I'll tell you something, it's great to be on here this evening via Insider NJ. And folks, hope you're having a wonderful end to your September. We got October right around the corner. We got a great guest coming up in just a moment here. But again, just want to remind you, folks, if you have any topics or issues you want to opine concerning the show, write to me, politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. Once again, politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. Now, if you wish to follow the show on Instagram, you can do so at politicallydirectnj. You could also follow me personally on Instagram at @your_favorite_Fernando. Certainly follow me on Twitter. I'd love to hear from you as well there. So follow me on Twitter at Professor F. Uribe. Certainly on Facebook. If you're not a fan of Politically Direct, what are you waiting for? Go to the page, like it. Tell your friends to do the same. Now, folks, again, toll-free number tonight, 818-572-8032. toll-free number tonight to call in. I'd love to hear from you. Again, we have a great guest coming up in just a moment here on Blog Talk Radio, and it's one that I've been looking forward to for quite some time. So certainly, again, I can't say enough about how great of an event, you know, we have here tonight on. Folks, one thing just as a reminder, a shout-out to my colleague Jay Lassiter at Insider NJ coming out with the LGBT power list and certainly the 100 top LGBT elected officials, activists, and much, much more. Again, shout-out to Jay Lassiter, my colleague at Insider NJ for today's publication. It's really been all over the news feed, all over social media, all over the internet. Folks, it's a great publication. If you haven't had a chance, check it out online. Of course, don't forget to check out Insider NJ every single day, folks, by going to www.insidernj.com. You can do so, again, from any PC, Mac, smartphone, or tablet. Do me a favor, once you're on the main link, click on the subscribe button right on the very top of the page, and you'll be subscribed absolutely free of charge to the Morning Intelligence Briefing, courtesy of Insider NJ. So for all the hot journalism, all the scoops going on in Trenton, everything that's going on at the governor's mansion and the legislature, and much, much more. Folks, trust me, nobody does it better than Insider NJ. Once again, www.insidernj.com. Don't forget to start your day with Insider NJ. Again, folks, great to be with you here tonight, the 27th of September, again on Blog Talk Radio. We got a great guest coming up in just a moment, so don't go anywhere. It's going to be an episode you do not want to miss whatsoever here via Insider NJ, folks. Again, I can't say enough about how excited I am to a guest that I've had for some time. And to be honest with you, it's a guy I greatly admire in the field of journalism, and I'm certain that you'll definitely like him too. Again, just coming up in a few moments. Folks, again, toll-free number later on tonight if you wish to call in and opine about any topics going on right now in the political climate in the state of New Jersey, 818-572-8032. And that is the toll-free number tonight here on Blog Talk Radio. And folks, again, if you're just joining us right now, great publication coming out exclusively today via Insider NJ and my colleague, Jay Lassiter, the Insider NJ LGBT Power 100 list. And we have some great guests on there this year that have been on Politically Direct. Again, I want to give a shout out to Garden State Equality Director of Programs, Aaron Potenza, as well as Alyssa Dawson, Westwood, New Jersey Councilwoman, who will be going for a full term this year. And again, I can't say enough about how great they've been with me on the show. And certainly I look forward to having them back on later on this year. But folks, without a doubt, all I can say to you is this is something that I've been looking forward to for some time. Shout out again to all friends of mine, certainly Christian Fuscarino, the executive director of Garden State Equality. I had the pleasure of meeting this past June at the Garden State Equality Bowl at the Asbury Park Lanes. Certainly a lot of elected officials, as I said, and community activists and other people really on the LGBT Power 100 list today. So shout out to all of them, and really, you know, keep up the good work being advocates for the LGBT community, and certainly for everyone else that supports Insider NJ. Great job by everyone there today. And folks, again, coming up here in just a few moments, we got a great guest coming up. Don't forget, 818-572-8032, toll-free number tonight. If you wish to call in and opine, again, if you want to send a question in on Twitter, hit me up, at Professor F. Uribe. I'll take questions tonight. We got a great guest coming up in just a moment. So if you got something to say, or got maybe a question I may not be asking, trust me, you'll definitely want me to put it on the air tonight here on Politically Direct. And folks, it is 8:10 here on the East Coast. And let me just welcome in right now, folks, at 8:10 here on the East Coast. I want to bring it exclusively to Politically Direct, a guy I greatly admire, the chief political correspondent for NJTV, and the guy that I call the Dean of New Jersey Journalism, the great Michael Aaron. Michael, welcome to Politically Direct, sir.
Thank you, Fernando.
Oh, well, it's great to have you, Michael. Certainly, it's an exclusive that I've been looking forward to. Great job you keep doing every week, Mike, with certainly with Off the Record and certainly Reporters Roundtable. I guess the first thing I got to ask you is, you know, certainly here in New Jersey, the political climate's been very volatile for some time. So there's never a shortage of stuff to talk about, Michael. What stands out for you right now in the Garden State?
Repeat that. What's what in the Garden State?
Well, what really stands out for you today in today's political climate right now in New Jersey, Michael?
The U.S. Senate race, three or four House races in districts that in past years wouldn't garner much attention. But this year, Democrats are challenging Republicans in Republican-leaning districts. I would say the U.S. Senate race between Bob Menendez and his Republican challenger, Bob Hugin, is the most interesting thing going on in the state, along with the new governor, Phil Murphy, very progressive, and, of course, topping everything is the national story, which, as we speak, took a remarkable turn today in a dramatic hearing in D.C.
Well, listen, and let's dissect all of that as we can here this hour. And certainly we'll start off with the Senate race. And, Michael, I've gone on record on this show for months now, and some people might just, you know, I do my best to be as objective as possible as a journalist and certainly as a podcast host. But, you know, I'm a guy that knows Bob Menendez personally. He's a guy that has been the mayor of my town in the past. He's been my elected representative in the Assembly, in the House of Representatives, and certainly the U.S. Senate. And, you know, by all accounts, I mean, Bob Menendez will be the first to tell you. He certainly has had some things he regrets, some things he'd like to sort of maybe do over. But, you know, he's a guy that I think has really taken up a lot of causes that, you know, people really don't know about, I think, throughout his time in the Senate. You know, he's advocated for families that, let's say, dealing with autism, working families for some time. And, you know, Michael, I get it that certainly this past June, the primary vote was a wake-up call for the Menendez camp, I think. His opponent, with relatively little to no money, was able to run a campaign from her smartphone. And consequently, she won five counties as a result in June. And I think that was a wake-up call for Senator Menendez. But I think that on the flip side, when you look at Bob Hugin, again, this is a guy who, you know, is trying to portray himself as a very different type of Republican, maybe a more moderate Republican. But, you know, aside from any association people want to attach to him concerning the president or maybe conservative groups, I have some real legitimate questions about his time as a CEO in the pharmaceutical industry. I think there's some things that maybe come into question. And I know it's a close race with the polls, but Michael, we know that polls are not an exact science anymore, as we know from November of 2016. But I'm going to go on record right now. I think that once people kind of get more mobilized in October and early November, I think Senator Menendez kind of wins by between 15% to 17%. You know, how do you see it? Am I wrong anywhere?
I think you got the margin wrong. I don't think it's going to be. I don't know that he's ever won an election, at least at Senate level, by 15% to 17%.
Yeah, 6 years ago, I think he beat Carrillo's by almost 19% 6 years ago. That's
was
why
it?
I'm kind of looking at. Yeah, actually, I believe he beat Kane by 7 or 8% in 2006, and I believe he beat Carrillo's between 18 to 19. I might be off, but I mean that was a really large margin, though, Michael, 6 years ago. And I think that, listen, he had baggage. He'll be the first one to tell you that. But I just think that Senator Menendez, you know, when you look at the national picture about Senate Democrats, and there are 35 Senate seats up for grabs, 27 are held by Democrats, and certainly, you know, they're going to have to hold all 27. And steal maybe one or two or three, maybe the most, from Republicans to kind of win the Senate back. I don't see Senator Menendez as vulnerable. Am I just being overconfident here, or maybe am I?
Yes, I think you are. First of all, let me just agree with you on his record. He has a strong record of fighting on a lot of fronts for a lot of groups in New Jersey, and probably doesn't get enough credit for that. He's also remarkable for having climbed the ladder and served at every level of government. He was on the Board of Education in Union City at age 20, then he became a councilman, a mayor, then a state assemblyman, then a state senator, then he went to Congress, and then to the U.S. Senate. The only thing he hasn't been is president. So he's got a remarkable career. That said, Bob Hugin I've seen him on the stump a few times in the past couple of weeks. He's credible. He's intelligent. He seems to know what he's talking about. They're attacking each other mercilessly.
Sure.
They each have this huge target of vulnerability. In Menendez's case, it's the corruption indictment that he survived. In Hugin's case, it's the reputation that Celgene has in some quarters for overcharging for cancer-fighting drugs. I think I read this week in the New York Times that the cost of Revlimid, which is the main cancer-fighting drug that Celgene manufactured, rose from a price of $6,000 per bottle in 2006, a bottle I think is a monthly supply, to $17,000 a bottle in 2016. So over the course of a decade, nearly tripled. And then the price was raised three times in 2017 by marginal amounts, at a time when Hugin was still executive chairman of the company. There was a wonderful profile of Celgene and Hugin in the New York Times this week.
I saw that.
By Nick Corsiniti and a co-writer. But the polling, the most recent public poll had Menendez up by six. That's not very many for an incumbent. Hugin has untold millions of dollars to throw on TV to drive home the Menendez is a corrupt career politician message. And I think one of the things Menendez has going for him is that in these House districts that I referred to, there's going to be larger than normal Democratic turnout, and they may well start at the top of the ballot and pull the lever for him.
You know, Michael, it's interesting to bring up those dynamics about certainly the advantages of an incumbent. And, you know, one of the things about these House races, which we'll get to in a moment, I mean, certainly, you know, you're a student of history, as I am as well. And, you know, quite frankly, doing some research myself before the show, I mean, aside from 1934 and 2002, I mean, the House of the incumbent party tends to flip anyway. That's just what history tells us. So the idea of a blue wave is, it seems very, number one, it seems inevitable just because that's what history tells us. But it wouldn't surprise anybody really about these numbers. I'd be very surprised about the Senate, though, based on the numbers I gave you. Again, it seems like Democrats have to keep every one of their seats and still steal 2 to 3 just to try to win the majority in the Senate.
Well, if Menendez is vulnerable, the National Democratic Party might have to send some money to New Jersey to offset Hugin's wealth, money that it would rather spend in some of these other districts. I mean, some of these other states like Missouri and North Dakota.
No, sure. And one of the things, though, too, Michael, is, again, this is just my observation. And certainly you, again, as I've called you repeatedly on this program, the dean of New Jersey journalism. I mean, you have such a good pulse of what's going on.
That just means I'm the oldest guy still standing.
No, not at all. No. I mean, as savvy and as wise as you are really in having a pulse of the political climate, the thing about Menendez, Michael, that really stands out for me is that when you look at senators, and again, you know, we saw it today during this confirmation hearings and the circus today in Washington concerning Brett Kavanaugh. I mean, Bob Menendez doesn't really come off as a sort of overly partisan ideologue. I don't think, you know, Bob has never been a guy that engages in hyperbole like some of his colleagues in the Senate. I mean, it's hard to sort of put Bob Menendez in the same boat as a Dick Durbin or a Chuck Schumer or someone like that. I think I've always looked at Bob as very middle of the road. Yes, he's a Democrat. Yes, he leans progressive to liberal on a lot of issues, but he doesn't seem as like the overly bombastic liberal that we come to know.
He's not bombastic,
Senate, right?
But he's not bombastic, but he's pretty mainstream Democrat. You're not going to see too many Republican views coming out of him.
Sure.
With two notable exceptions, and they are the exceptions that may have gotten him into trouble. Iran, the nuclear deal, he was against it. And Cuba, the opening to Cuba, he was vehemently against that. And there's a school of thought, which I don't subscribe to, that says that President Obama was so upset with Menendez that he encouraged Eric Holder, the attorney general, to indict him on the corruption charge. I just don't think Obama worked that way. But there is that school of thought. But back to Menendez. I think he's reasonably partisan. I think he knows what his party stands for, and he stands with his party 98% of the time. He's not bombastic in style. He's a little milder than that. Very intelligent, understands policy. Impressive guy who, I don't know why he's friends with Salomon Melgen or why they, I guess they had a lot in common, but Melgen really destroyed Menendez or brought him down several notches.
No, absolutely. And again, I mean, we'll see what happens between now and November 6th. I mean, certainly the race is tightening up. I mean, I think the debates are going to be very interesting. I'm looking forward to seeing them. Of course, seeing you.
I'm moderating, I believe, the one TV debate they've agreed to so far. Maybe they've agreed to more. But on October 24th, I get to moderate a one-hour debate between those two.
Well, Mike, I mean, listen, you do a great job every time you moderate. So I'll be, obviously, it'll be no surprise to anyone that you'll keep order, because I anticipate a very feisty exchange that night.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Between them. Yeah. I mean, if anyone
they've been very negative. I think a month ago I called this the dirtiest race in New Jersey in two decades. There was a very dirty Senate race back in the 90s between Bob Torricelli and Republican Dick Zimmer.
They were
throwing mud pies at each other. But
absolutely.
Hugin and Menendez have been saying awful things about each other for months now.
Certainly.
What'd you say, Fernando?
No, if there's anybody that can keep order that night, if there's anybody that can be that, you know, and I'm a big pro wrestling fan, so I'm going to use an analogy here. If there's anybody that can be that referee to maintain order that evening, it's going to be you, Michael. I got no doubt about that whatsoever.
Thanks, Fernando.
No, definitely. Mike, moving on to sort of the house races, one house race that really stands out for me, I think it's one of the more interesting ones here in New Jersey, is certainly, I believe, in the 5th Congressional District between Jay Weber and Mikey Sherrill. And
that's the 11th.
I'm sorry. Yes, I'm sorry about that. Sorry. Excuse me. Yeah, the 11th congressional. My apologies.
I'm glad you weren't going to ask me about the 5th, because that's Josh Gottheimer against John McCain, and I'm not following that one that closely. So let's go to District 11.
Definitely. That's a really interesting race, because it sort of lends itself to the mindset that, you know, parts of New Jersey have always been traditionally blue. Like, for example, where I live in Hudson County has always been blue. Union County, Middlesex, you know, down to maybe Atlantic, Essex as well. But you've had some other
Camden.
Counties in New Jersey, Camden as well. But you've had some counties that have been traditionally very red, from Monmouth County to Morris. And, you know, Morris County is a very unique demographic now, Michael, because, you know, you're seeing the race being very close between Sherrill and Weber. And, you know, Jay Weber's a guy that has a lot of political clout still in New Jersey. I think, you know, I know his name's been thrown around as a possible 2021 opponent for Phil Murphy in the general election, you know, certainly for the Republican nomination. But first things first, we got to see what he does in November in this House race. How do you see this measuring up right now?
You just turned a light on in my head. Weber in 2021.
Yep, I've heard it.
Have you? I've wondered sometimes why he's in this race, And because I think he's losing and he's been out fundraised 8-1 or 9-1, and Mikey Sherrill is a phenomenon. Mikey, for those who may not know her, is a woman, a former woman Navy helicopter pilot, a former woman federal prosecutor, a mother of four, a very appealing person. So most handicappers in New Jersey politics think that Mikey's going to win, and I've thought about Jay Weber and his motivation and his level of confidence. He's a very impressive guy. He's nice looking. He's very articulate. He's Harvard educated. He's very conservative, which doesn't always go along with those other traits, but in his case, it does. And maybe what he's doing is establishing himself for a future run for a different office.
I've heard that, and I think that certainly this race, I think, can really, really give us a good outlook about the demographics politically in that section of New Jersey, which is, you know, Morris County has always been very traditionally red. And again, you know, you raised an excellent point about Sherrill's fundraising. I mean, she's brought in everyone from Joe Biden to certainly Senator Booker has been at her side at events.
Gabby
and I know
Giffords.
Other national Democrats have really come out for her. And it's one of those things, again, it wouldn't surprise me just because history tells us this, Mike, that, again, aside from 2 years, 1934 and 2002, the House tends to flip during the first midterm. So I don't think this is going to surprise anybody. I think this is, again, maybe it's more rhetoric. Maybe it's just hyperbole because it's election season. But I really just see that, you know, I'd be shocked if Democrats don't win the House. And if they don't win the House, despite the climate we're living in right now, where in certain parts of the country, Republicans aren't viewed favorably, and we'll get to that in a moment, why that is. Again, if Democrats, you know, the idea of running on policy, I think, is important, Michael. The idea of resist, and being defiant or being combative, I understand where that mindset comes from. But the problem, though, is that resist doesn't always win elections. We've seen that before. Could that be a blueprint that could be disastrous for some Democrats, though, Michael?
I don't know who. I think resist is where the ultra progressive wing of the party comes in, and they're essential to a victory. But I don't think the candidates themselves are occupying that same ground. I think they're more moderate. For example, in the Weber-Sherrill race, Weber wants to tie Mikey Sherrill to those who would abolish ICE, which is sort of a resist kind of a policy. And Sherrill says she doesn't want to abolish ICE, and that Weber's misrepresenting her. I think winning campaigns on the Democratic side in House races are going to need the ultra-progressive base vote, which is probably not as large as the Trump base vote. Maybe it's 10 or 15% of the electorate, not the 35 or 40 that make up the Trump base. But then there are all the liberals and moderates and independents in this state where of nearly a million more Democrats than Republicans. And you put the far left coalition together with the moderates and the independents, and you win.
You're right about that. And I think that that's certainly a map that I think appeals to, you know, the left side of the aisle. And certainly we'll see about that coming up in November. And we'll get back to politics in a moment, Michael. But I certainly want to, again, commend you on the great job you do with not just Off the Record, but with the Reporters Roundtable. And I watch it religiously. I certainly enjoy the content. And, you know, after all these years, certainly, you know, because you're such a fixture in journalism here in New Jersey, you're perhaps the most visible name and face here in the state. You know, after a while, I'm sure maybe people ask you, you know, you've been doing it for so long. How do you still stay energized? how do you still stay so engaged and focused? Because you really are. Like, I watch you every week, and, you know, you're so astute in the presentation. You're so savvy. But after a while, maybe people have to ask, like, Michael, how do you really keep this interest and energy up? Because this can be exhausting, right?
That's a good question. And I'm getting to an age where I wrestle with that question. But I sometimes I'm out on a story, and I do run around the state with a cameraman a lot, usually every three or four days a week. And I sometimes say to myself, would I rather be home right now reading? And the answer is usually no. I'd rather be doing what I'm doing. New Jersey politics is pretty interesting. I used to say, and it's sort of become my mantra, if you're a reporter in New Jersey never lets you down. It's an interesting state. The politics here are played for keeps. It's a kind of hardball style of politics.
Sure.
The people who enter the game are interesting figures to watch. And so I guess I find the whole ball of wax still interesting. And I think if I were to retire, I'd probably go to press conferences for entertainment. I'd be like one of those trial watchers who
sure.
goes to the courthouse to pass the time.
No,
so
I
might as well I might as well make a living and keep plying my trade and getting the gratification of the work itself and the people I work with and the younger people coming up who I can serve as an example for. I don't really train anybody, but I think by osmosis sometimes they get a little something from me. And I work with a very terrific team of very smart young journalists.
No, you certainly do. Absolutely, Michael. And one of the things that stands out for me really is just your ability to just, you know, keep it fresh. And like I said, because I watch your programming regularly, I mean, you always have been able to have this knack for just being, you know, quick on your feet and really asking those questions, I think, that matter to the viewers and really holding elected officials accountable. And one of the, you know, something in your narrative right now, you just mentioned about interesting figures, you know, certainly one interesting figure that commands headlines here in New Jersey is the governor. And, you know, last November, he won by a very large margin, despite a very poor overall turnout with the electorate in New Jersey. I think it was one of the smaller voter turnouts in recent history, which was disappointing. But certainly at 9 months now into an administration, Governor Murphy has really differentiated himself from his predecessor, Chris Christie. And again, some of the policies he's advocated for and some of the policies he's been trying to push through with the help of the legislature have commanded a lot of attention and even in some avenues, some concerns. And, you know, again, I don't want to put you on the spot, but, you know, I'm a homeowner and a taxpayer like yourself, of course. And, you know, I just look at the overall fiscal direction of New Jersey just plummeting, Michael. And, you know, it's easy to sort of, you know, lay the blame on Washington, how that rhetoric is sexy in today's political climate, and say, well, what's coming out of Washington is what's, you know, hurting taxpayers and Americans and the tax reform. And maybe the tax reform is only helping certain Americans and, you know, tariffs are hurting Americans or New Jerseyans. But Michael, at the end of the day, you know, it's Trenton that's really been killing us here for some time. And I just think that sort of blaming Washington, I think, kind of misses the overall picture. Am I wrong here or am I just?
No, I agree. I agree with you. I think the high cost of living in New Jersey has more to do with public policy in New Jersey than at the federal level. But I've been doing journalism in New Jersey now for 40 years, 36 of them at public television. And high property taxes have always been the number one issue in those 40 years. Nobody has tamed the property tax beast. There have been several serious attempts, including Chris Christie's 2% cap on municipal and school budget growth. I think John Corzine had a 2.5% cap when he was governor. There have been attempts to control it, but the way the state is structured, it's just a high tax state. And you're right about Murphy. He's not cutting taxes. In fact, he raised a couple of taxes, mainly on the wealthy and corporations. I don't know that I saw last night on NJTV News that that's my newscast, that the Tax Foundation in Washington just ranked New Jersey 50th for tax structure out of the 50 states.
I believe it.
It's we just live in an expensive state. Murphy likes to say it's a value for money state, that you get so much back from paying these high taxes. You could argue that we have generally good schools.
Yes.
We need an infrastructure overhaul badly.
That's right.
So I don't know what kind of value we're getting. That's a subjective kind of a question, but I don't think I'm going to live to see the day that taxes go down in New Jersey.
Oh, listen, it's demoralizing. It really is, Michael. And something I wanted to sort of ask you about, because, you know, again, because of your presence in journalism for so long, and really you've been such a fixture, you know, the press, or attack on the press, really has been in the national political dialogue for some years now. And I would argue that probably it started even before, I think, the 45th president took office. I think that for some time, many Americans, whether it's, you know, here in New Jersey or even nationwide, you know, over time have started developing a mistrust for the media. And again, I'm not trying to put you on the spot here, but it just seems that for some time, and you've never struck me as someone that is overly ideological. I think you do a wonderful job of being very middle of the road, being a good journalist with integrity and being objective. But one of the things that concerns a lot of Americans, Michael, is the fact that some colleagues in your field don't practice that. And we see it a lot in cable news where it's partisan on certain networks. I get it. There are certain conservative journalists, there are certain liberal journalists, there may be some middle of the road journalists, but there's been sort of a genuine mistrust of the media for some years now. I looked at a Pew poll, I think last year, I think even earlier this year, where, you know, Americans overall have very high mistrust of the national media. Again, I don't want to delve into the code words, you know, the hashtag fake news and everything else that we've become so inundated with. But, you know, as a journalist and as someone who's really been good at what he does, Michael, how concerned, or, I mean, how saddened are you by seeing this sort of, you know, cloud that seems to be applied to journalism now, not just maybe on a state level, but on a national level as well?
I'm not too saddened by the state of journalism. I think there's a place for advocacy journalism. I don't practice it.
Yeah, that's right.
I am middle of the road. I try to hide whatever my leanings are. The ultimate compliment you can pay a journalist, as far as I'm concerned, is he's fair. Or I like when people say to me, you know, I don't know what party you support. I'm doing my job right if they say that to me. But I think there's a place for Fox News and MSNBC and CNN and websites that have a hard point of view. I don't know if you've ever seen New Jersey Conservative, but boy, is it it's about as conservative as you can get and still be legal.
Oh no, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. No, I've seen it. Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I've seen it.
I think the problem with the press has been more of an economic problem and a technological problem than a political problem or a bias problem. I know a lot of people think that the press has a liberal bias, and I would say honestly that many newsrooms, for whatever reason, are more liberal than they are conservative. Liberals are drawn to journalism perhaps more than conservatives. I don't know why that is, but most of the journalists I know are professional enough to, if they're writing in the news pages, to keep it even, keep it balanced, keep it fair, and if they're writing on the editorial page, to unleash whatever opinion they hold. I think New Jersey's been, even as some of our newspapers have disappeared and or shrunk, that the rise of some websites have supplanted what we had in the way of print journalism, and that New Jerseyans are reasonably well served if they know and bother, if they know where to go for news and bother to go there.
You know, Michael, you raise a great point about the decline of sort of publications for many years now. And, you know, we look at the internet that's, you know, relatively, I think, celebrating, depends on who you ask or how you Google it, you know, somewhere between 23 to 25 years from its inception. And tremendously, it's really, you know, made a dent in the traditional print media where, you know, local newspapers don't exist anymore, or for the most part, they're down in sales, and people now rely on social media, whether that's right or wrong. And I'll certainly get your thoughts in a minute about that. But, you know, we've become such a smartphone dependent society. Now we get our news. We do almost everything on our smartphones, and we get our news, whether it's liberal, conservative, or, you know, moderate. And, you know, really, I think that it's done a considerable harm to the way that we get our news. And I think the way that, you know, news is delivered, because it just seems to me, and I'll remember a quote that I saw. I think it was Denzel Washington that gave a commencement speech at a college, I think, last year. And I'm sort of paraphrasing, but he basically said, you know, it's like, you know, if you read the news, you know, you're misinformed. If you don't read the news, you're uninformed. And that was a really striking quote for me when I heard Denzel Washington say that to a bunch of college graduates, where, you know, the news now seems to be, again, I'm not trying to paint with a broad brush, but the idea of, you know, you have to be first. You have to be first. You know, the hell if you're right or not, but it's about being first. And I'm not saying that that's the sort of the blueprint now for journalism, but it seems that a lot of people nationwide, and even in New Jersey, I think, are turned off by the fact that it's just about getting it out there, and whether or not it's accurate, well, we'll deal with that later. Is that a fair judgment that's out there concerning maybe the state of journalism because of social media and because of the internet?
Well, there's always been competition among news organizations, and maybe it's a little more intense in this day and age of 24-hour news cycles and breaking a story in the early part of the day instead of waiting for the evening or the following morning paper. There's probably a competition for clicks that's a little more heightened than the old style morning and evening newspaper competition. But I don't agree with Denzel Washington that if you read, what did he say? If you read the news, you're misinformed.
And if you don't read, you're uninformed.
If you don't, you're ill-informed.
Yes.
Is that what he said?
Pretty much, yeah. I'm sort of paraphrasing it. Yeah, I'm sort of paraphrasing it there, yes.
I still have two newspapers on my driveway every morning, the Star Ledger and the New York Times. I wish I had time to read them all. And I wish I had time every day to read four websites. Observer NJ, although it's kind of fading away. Insider NJ, which you're connected with.
Yay, absolutely.
NJ Spotlight. And New Jersey Globe, which is the website that David Wildstein, who was caught up in the Bridgegate scandal, has recently started. And he started the original politics website in New Jersey, politickernj.com, which morphed into The Observer, and now The Observer doesn't really pay that much attention to New Jersey. But I wish I had time. Those websites aggregate news and generate news, and God, would I be well informed if I could read the Ledger cover to cover, the New York Times cover to cover, and those four websites every day. There just aren't enough hours in the day to do that, particularly
absolutely.
Since I like watching cable news at night. And whenever
yeah,
a commercial comes, when a commercial comes on, I click to one of the others of the three main ones, and I like to see what all sides are thinking.
I'm the same way, Michael. And I tell my students all the time, you know, as a sociology professor, I tell my students regularly, like, watch the news, be thorough, and be a little versatile in your news consumption. I'm the same way as you. I mean, I read the news every day. I don't have a newspaper delivered anymore, but I read somewhere between 5 to 6 websites every day, and I watch cable news at night. I watch MSNBC. I watch CNN. I do watch the BBC. I watch Fox. I try to watch RT. I try to be as informed as possible, but you're right. There aren't enough hours in the day for that.
Right.
And I think it can be a frustrating enterprise for us. Folks, if you're just joining us right now, it is 8:45 in the East Coast. It's my pleasure to still have with us here live on Politically Direct, the chief political correspondent for NJTV, Michael Aaron, here on Blog Talk Radio. Michael, getting back to sort of statewide politics, you know, one of the things that stands out about Governor Murphy that he has not been shy about has been, well, a few things. Certainly, you know, trying to raise the minimum wage to $15 an hour has generated some controversy. I know that his appeal, and maybe some of New Jersey would call it pandering, perhaps, depends on where you sit on the aisle politically, towards illegal immigrants. Also, the idea of free community college, perhaps the outright legalization of recreational marijuana has been in the news feed for some time. It seems like Governor Murphy wants to do a lot, and I'm always skeptical when a politician says to me, let's do this because of revenue, because we need it, and it'll raise the revenue we need, and New Jersey will be on a better fiscal path. I'm always skeptical about that. I was skeptical about the gas tax, and I was proven to be right, and now we're going to have another gas tax implemented. The idea about, you know, outright marijuana legalization, I'm very skeptical about also. And even the idea of, you know, how do we pay for these things? Free community college. How do we pay for driver's licenses for illegals? How do we pay for legal defense funds for illegals? I mean, there's a lot of progressive policies there that sound great on paper, Michael, but for a lot of New Jerseyans like me, like, our pockets are really tight right now. And I don't know how feasible this is. Am I overreacting here about Governor Murphy's policies, or is there a genuine concern about this?
No, I think you have I think you have a legitimate concern. I think Murphy is the most progressive, most liberal governor we've ever had in the modern era, and he's a wealthy guy who wants to do good and wants people like himself to foot much of the bill. I mean, he wanted to impose an income tax hike on people earning more than $1 million a year and was thwarted, and the threshold had to get set at $5 million a year, which is almost a ridiculous amount of money. I think there's something like only 240 people in the state who make more than $5 million a year. I think I read that number somewhere. But
okay.
Murphy has a lot of ambitions for the state. He wants this state to be a center of innovation. He wants to modernize everything in the state. He wants to extend free education, as you noted. You call it free community college. He would say it's extending primary and secondary education by 2 more years. You get a free education now in elementary school, in middle school, in high school, and we're just going to tack a couple more years onto that because everybody in the modern era needs some college under their belts. His ambitions at the moment are being restrained primarily by the two legislative leaders of his own party, the Senate President and the Assembly Speaker, Steve Sweeney and Craig Coughlin. Sweeney has started sounding more and more like a Republican in his rhetoric when he talks about affordability. It used to be Tom Kaine Jr., the current state Senate minority leader, who in every other paragraph of a press release or a speech would talk about, we've got to make New Jersey affordable. And now Sweeney has adopted that same phrase, that same term. And Coughlin has pledged that although we raised a couple of taxes in the last budget go-round in June, that in the next budget go-round, next June, he won't tolerate any tax increases. So I think people are sensitive to the tax problem and are trying to restrain Murphy's instincts to improve the well-being of as many people as possible. Murphy just seems more willing to try to raise taxes in a smart way than his colleagues.
Well, I can see that, and you're definitely right on that observation. And again, State Senate President Sweeney has generated a lot of controversy within his own party as it pertains this past June with the budget and whether or not he was going to be on the same page with the governor. And some of New Jersey would argue that he's been very defiant against Phil Murphy. I mean, certainly there's no love lost there, right, because of
what happened last November,
because of what happened during the legislative elections where you had the NGEA outright supporting a Trump Republican who would have thought that. And you saw $5 million, I think, at the minimum, inserted into a legislative race, which, I never heard of in recent memory here in New Jersey of a race getting that much attention and that much money. And, you know, I can understand why Steve Sweeney was really, you know, pissed off at then-candidate Murphy, because it seemed like Phil Murphy wasn't standing up for him. I ran into Steve Sweeney at the League of Municipalities in Atlantic City in November, and I remember I interviewed him very briefly for the podcast, and I said, you know, and he was very emphatic about how much he despised the NGEA, and I think maybe deep down, I think he was upset that Phil Murphy, then-candidate Murphy, wasn't coming to his aid. Do you think that bad blood has subsided, or maybe it's
no.
on the sidelines for now?
No, I don't think it has. I think they're still playing games with each other. I think Sweeney has been trying to thwart and undercut Murphy for well over a year now, and Murphy has finally caught on and fired back in various subtle ways. They need each other. They have a very peculiar relationship. When you see them in public, they sort of make a show of patting each other on the back and smiling and schmoozing and showing body language that suggests camaraderie. And then you hear through the grapevine that they're trying to kill each other politically.
Sure.
We had an example of it last week. The State Democratic Party held its annual 2-day conference in Atlantic City. It was a celebration of Murphy and of Bob Menendez. And Steve Sweeney and Craig Coughlin didn't go. They went to a fundraiser 2 hours away up in Bergen County for a relatively new state senator, Joe Lugano. It looked like a deliberate thumb of the nose at the governor and his supporters. The Democratic Party in this state is riven in two, and I don't know what's going to heal it. But what's going to heal it is a desire to get things done that both sides, both parties believe will, both sides of that party believe will help the state. Maybe it'll be recreational marijuana, which Sweeney and Murphy both seem to believe in. Maybe it'll be minimum wage, which they both have taken a similar position on. They'll be brought together when they have to get a bill passed. But in the meantime, they're giving us journalists a lot of behind-the-scenes intrigue to play with.
Oh, no, sure. And listen, they give me plenty of material every week here on my podcast to talk about. And, certainly...
So we're grateful to them, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Keep fighting, boys.
Yeah. No, and it's interesting, though, Michael, because I think that there's a very real fracture within the Democratic Party statewide. And again, I think we see it with, you know, on a statewide level, you know, Bob Menendez is going to need a big turnout from every county chair. And it's starting up here in Hudson with the new chair, Amy DeGees, down to Scutari and Union County and everywhere else. I think that statewide, I mean, listen, in June, when Lisa McCormick won five counties, I spoke to operatives in the Menendez camp personally, and they, in a roundabout way, pretty much didn't panic with me on the phone, but they were like, wow, this is a wake-up call. And I think that statewide, when you mentioned that the turnout at the event in Atlantic City for Democrats, I mean, I think it was in recent years you saw somewhere between 700 to 800 people attending. There were well over 2,000 attendees this past week. I mean, it was a real show solidarity. But I think there's a very real fracture statewide in the party. And if they don't come together, for example, for Bob Menendez, that could spell doom for him in November.
You're right. I spoke to an operative on the Menendez side a week or two ago who said the key for Menendez is urban turnout. If Menendez doesn't get city dwellers energized to come to the polls for him, that it could be a tough night for him.
No, it certainly could be. I mean, we'll find out. I'm just still of the belief, though, Michael, that because of just the body of work, and I look at Bob Menendez as someone who's just, yes, he's a devoted Democrat, he's progressive, but I just don't look at him as this really overly, like, radical left-wing type of liberal senator. And we can name them, you know, whether it's Dick Durbin, whether it's Chuck Schumer, whether to some extent maybe it's Kirsten Gillibrand across the river in New York. Bob just doesn't seem that way to me. And I think
I agree with you. I call him a middle-of-the-road or mainstream Democrat. And one other thing about him that we didn't mention when we were talking about him 20 minutes ago is that he has a national profile as an Hispanic leader. You would know more about that than I do, but...
Oh, yeah, absolutely, yeah. I mean, he's a very visible Cuban-American. And to your point before, I know you raised the theory that perhaps there was some backlash from the Obama administration when it came to his opposition on the Cuba policy and the Iran policy. I did hear that, Michael, and I know your sources are infinitely better than mine, but I did hear that theory floated around. And again, I don't know how much credibility I want to give it on the air today, but I did hear that. But, you know, again, we look at Bob Menendez as a guy who's been very middle of the road, and I think that could really help him with independence. I think some independents might say, you know what, we get it. He has baggage. He's admitted he has baggage, but if we look at him, you know, he's not as a radical liberal as, let's say, Dianne Feinstein out in California or Dick Durbin in Illinois or others, you know. So it'll be interesting, though. But Michael, again, and you know, just a couple more things I want to cover with you tonight. You've been a gentleman just to be on here as long as you have. But moving forward with NJTV and certainly with, you know, your show Off the Record and Reporters Roundtable, you know, what's been probably, and I hate to put you on the spot about this, but what have been some of your favorite guests on lately?
I'm sorry, Fernando. My TV just turned on by itself. Go ahead. What?
Sure, no problem. No. With your projects, you know, Reporters Roundtable and Off the Record, what have been some of your favorite guests lately And what's made them stand out for you in terms of, I mean, because you've interviewed so many people, you've interviewed governors, legislators, activists, everybody under the sun. But any recent guests that have really stood out for you and said, wow, like I was really impressed by him or her?
That's a tough question. I had the assembly speaker on for 25 minutes, a half hour, about a month ago, Craig Coughlin. I think I was impressed with how he handled himself. I think he's growing into the job. I had Governor Murphy on 6 months ago and was very pleased with how that interview went. I remember I asked him if he... I called him a happy warrior, and he laughed. I said, has anybody ever used that phrase with you before? That phrase, of course, goes back to Hubert Humphrey in the 60s, who was called the happy warrior, and who was sort of an ebullient style. And Murphy said, no one's ever used that term about me before. I don't know if that's true. I don't know if he was being honest. I don't know why I even think that was a memorable moment, but it felt right. I generally like the people I interview and respect what they do, and I'm not out to get them. I'm not out to show them
that's
up.
Right.
If I'm going to ask a tough question, I try to do it politely. But in a way, all these interviews are like your children. It's hard to pick out the best one.
Sure. You know, that's a great answer, Michael. That's a great answer. And before I let you go, because obviously, you know, we could talk for 3 or 4 hours here, Michael, and not get through everything, but I want to really get to the
We could, and I enjoyed talking to you when I needed commentary on Hudson County and Hispanic politics. So I want to return the compliment.
Thank you, Michael. And again, I'm hoping to have you back on again later, maybe in October, maybe leading up to the midterms, have you back on again. But before I let you go, Michael, again, I just want to say that I was so looking forward to tonight's interview with you because I've had such a deep respect for what you do. I've always sort of been in awe of just, you know, your presence as a journalist. And, you know, I was very delighted when you decided to come on the show tonight. And really, I'm grateful. And I'm glad you have a high opinion of Insider Ren Jay. And certainly, you know, we're glad to have you aboard here. And certainly, I definitely want to have you back on. But before I let you go, one of the things that I do with all my guests, though, is, you know, we've had a great conversation, and I look forward to having you back on. I hope you'll come back, though, right? I think we've had a great show.
Sure. Yeah. We've had a good discussion. I've enjoyed it.
Yeah. You know, thank you, and I really appreciate that. Before I let you go, like I said, like I do with every guest, you know, now the floor is yours, Michael. If you got a question for me or you want to grill me about something, the floor is yours, Mike. You know, so ask away anything that's on your mind, and I'd love to hear it.
Who's going to be the 2020 Democratic presidential candidate?
Oh, you know, it's funny you say that. You know, it's funny you say that. I host a podcast here in Hudson County on Wednesday nights about Hudson County politics, and I had the county chair, Amy DeGees, on last night, and we talked about this. And I just have this crazy theory that because of the numbers I gave you tonight concerning Menendez, I think that Bob is going to win somewhere between 15% to 17%. I think if he has a strong showing, like I think he will, I just have a feeling that I could see Menendez throwing his name into the hat into 2020. Huh. I really think so. I just, you know,
you're dreaming, Fernando. He stood trial on corruption charges. You can't run for president.
Well,
with that
albatross
around your neck.
No, I hear you.
He's a great guy, Menendez. He's a great guy, Menendez, and a great public servant. But his chances at the presidency were slim to none to begin with before he was accused of corruption.
True. I mean, there were some rumors, right, that he could have been Hillary's VP nominee, right? Had he not
That's
been
true.
Indicted. Whatever.
That is true.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're right. I mean, maybe it's too big a noose to avoid. But again, some just told me that in my gut. But to answer your question, I really think in my heart of hearts, I just have a feeling that it's going to be Elizabeth Warren. Just something tells me about her. I think that she's really just it's, you know, there are a lot of very progressive, if not overly left people that are going to be in the pool, whether it's Cory Booker and others as well. I don't think former Vice President Biden is going to be in there. I think his time has passed. I think if he wanted to throw his name, he should have done it 2 years ago. He didn't. He chose to defer to Hillary Clinton. I think history will tell us that that probably will cost him. I think he missed his window there. I just have a feeling that Elizabeth Warren really campaigns well. I think she fundraises very well. And I think that there's just a very – there's a growing progressive wing, though, Michael, in the Democratic Party that is, I think, growing. Not to the extent of, for example, you know, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez across the river in New York, who's a socialist. But I think that Warren appeals to a lot of people on the left. And I think that she might play the woman card. You know, why not? And she'll have to differentiate herself. I think it's going to be Elizabeth Warren. But, Michael, again, my thoughts on this have been clear. The economy, a lot can change between now and then, between now and 2020. But if the economy continues to do what it's doing, and we're seeing record unemployment in a lot of different demographics for women and blacks and Hispanics, and we're seeing better take-home pay for different Americans in different regions of the country, we're seeing corporations bringing jobs back into our own borders. You know, I get it. The president lacks the quorum. I get it. The president is not presidential. The president oftentimes does not behave very well. But you know what? We knew that when many Americans voted for him. And if the economy, you know, as James Carville once said, it's, you know what it's about when it comes to the economy. And if the economy is doing well, it might be even hard for even a Democrat to unseat the president. But there's a long way between 2020.
I don't disagree with you. I think he has a 50-50 chance of getting reelected. Assuming he's still president.
That's true. You never know. But Michael, I want to take this opportunity again. Thank you so much. You're a gentleman. And listen, I hope at some point I'll earn the credit or the currency to be on Reporters Roundtable with maybe fellow journalists on one day. I hope to be on there with you.
I'll add your name to our master list.
Oh, that'd be great, Michael. But again, I want to thank you tonight for your transparency and really the excellent work that you do for journalism. And again, keep up the great work. We'll certainly touch base, and I look forward to having you back on next month, and we'll keep talking the news. And you know what? You keep doing what you're doing because you're awesome at it, Michael.
Thanks, Fernando. I appreciate that.
You have a great night, and we'll talk again soon, Mike.
All right. So long.
Have a good – you too. All right, folks. All right. Here, 9:10 on the East Coast. And a great interview tonight with the chief political correspondent from NJTV, folks. Michael Aaron, and again, a guy who I deeply respect and have an immense amount of admiration for. A great, great, a great episode tonight. And we really covered a lot. And, you know, one of the things that stood out tonight, folks, I don't know if you maybe feel the same way I do, and I'll certainly take some calls from you if you wish, 818-572-8032, and get your thoughts about who I call the Dean of New Jersey Journalism, Michael Aaron. Was just how fluid he was tonight and how transparent he is. And that's what makes him great. Again, if you don't watch NJTV, certainly I hope you do, but if you have a chance to watch Off the Record with him and also the Reporters Roundtable, my goodness, folks, it is as informative a broadcast as you will ever see, I think, in New Jersey politics. And for me, I think it's one of those dynamics that, what I would urge you to do is, you know, be that type of person that, you know, if you're looking to be informed about New Jersey politics, you know, you want to watch his shows. And again, it's just a testament to what he does. And again, I'm just very lucky to have him on, and, you know, looking forward to having him back on in October, leading up to the midterm elections. And certainly I know that I'm excited to see him moderate the debate between the U.S. Senate candidates, you know, incumbent Senator Bob Menendez and his challenger, Bob Hugin. We'll find out. You know, we're going to see what happens. And certainly I think that when you look at what NJTV does, I know that Insider NJ has been forming a partnership with them. I'm excited about that. And certainly, you know, we're looking forward to having Miss Aaron on later on this month, and hopefully on a more frequent basis. So, folks, stay tuned for that. And again, you know, if you missed any part of tonight's broadcast with exclusively with the chief political correspondent of NGTV, Michael Aaron, folks, go to www.blogtalkradio.com/politicallydirectNJ. You can also go on the Insider NJ podcast page, which is insidernj.com/podcasts, and you can listen to tonight's episode with Michael Aaron, and of course, all of my previous episodes here concerning Politically Direct. And, you know, folks, really, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, it's been a great night here to have him on, and certainly, you know, we look forward to some great guests coming up now in October, leading up to not just only the midterm elections, but also at the same time trying to, you know, being very, I think, informative and illuminating here on the show. So, again, www.blogtalkradio.com/politicallydirectNJ. Also, www.insidernj.com/podcast. You can listen in to any of my episodes absolutely free of charge with from any PC, Mac, smartphone, or tablet. Now, again, don't forget to, if you have a comment you wish to provide, if you wish to opine about tonight's episode, folks, I'd love to hear from you. PoliticallyDirectNJ@yahoo.com. PoliticallyDirectNJ@yahoo.com. Again, don't forget to follow me on Twitter at Professor F. Uribe. Love to check out my Twitter feed, and I love all the comments on Twitter. Certainly, feel free to reach out to me on Twitter. Also on Instagram, folks, the brand new followers and likes each and every day. I'm grateful to all of my fans here on social media. So again, you can follow the show at PoliticallyDirectNJ, and also follow me personally on Instagram at @your_favorite_Fernando. Certainly, folks, if you have not checked out Politically Direct on Facebook, hey, take a moment, click the like button, share it, tell your friends on Facebook to do the same. And again, don't forget to check out Insider NJ, folks, by going to their website, www.insidernj.com. For the absolute best journalism you'll find every day online with our excellent editor-in-chief, Max Pizarro, and our great group of journalists that make up the Insider NJ team. And once you go on the website, folks, click on the subscribe button at the very top, and you'll be enrolled absolutely free to our morning intelligence briefing, conveniently delivered to your inbox each and every day, whether it's on your PC, Mac, smartphone, or tablet. Insider NJ will give you the scoop about what's going on in the Garden State. Again, check them out, www.insidernj.com, the best journalism you'll find online here in the Garden State. Don't forget to start your day with Insider NJ. Again, big shout out to my colleague at Insider NJ, Jay Lassiter, for today's publication of the LGBT Power 100 list here. Certainly, just want to give a shout out again also to recent guests that were on the Power list, the Director of Programs with Garden State Equality, Aaron Potenza, and certainly Councilwoman out of Westwood, New Jersey, Alyssa K. Dawson, two great guests I've had on this year since Politically Direct started. Congrats to them for being on the LGBT Power 100 list, courtesy of Insider NJ. Again, shout out to Jay Lassiter. Very well put together. If you haven't checked it out, folks, go to the Insider NJ website, and you'll see all of the great LGBT activists, as well as community leaders and elected officials, and everyone in between representing the LGBT community here in New Jersey. And don't forget, ladies and gentlemen, whether it's on your morning commute, getting a daily workout in, walking your dog, for my students, both past and present, take a break, tune in, and you'll be happy that you did. And don't forget that it's real, it's here, it's Politically Direct. Good night, Newark, the home of NJTV, and also the home of my alma mater, Rutgers University, where I completed my graduate studies. Yes, the Graduate School of Newark. Diehard alumni right here, folks. Yours truly, Fernando Uribe. Please party responsibly, folks. Be careful there when you're going out this weekend, whether it's the Hoboken Arts and Crafts Festival, which is great during the fall, or if you're going down the shore, down to AC, wherever you're going, folks. Please party responsibly. Be careful out there. And I'll see you next week here on Blog Talk Radio. And don't forget, keep on talking.